My name is David Bella, and I'm an engineer, and I've worked with computers. I'm not a computer programmer. I've used computers for a number of things. And this session is going to be on the computer, and I will follow a theme that I followed through several of my discussions, and that by understanding a little bit more the challenge that technology imposes upon us, we can discover something unique in our spiritual lives, and that it is important now to examine the limitations of this technological world and how much it has imposed upon us, or else what will the danger that we will have is we will simply become of this world, not just in it. We become of this world, and our language, our concepts, and our approach to religion itself will be taken over by a technological way of thinking without us even knowing that. Okay, that's the thing. Well, the challenge I want to talk about now is the challenge of the computer. The computer. And I don't mean just mean the computer where you can balance your checkbook or some of the standard kinds of things, but I mean the more advanced kinds of things that they're saying about computers. I've read that the Japanese now are spending literally, I guess, billions of dollars developing the next generation computer. I guess they call it the fifth generation computer, or I'm not sure which generation they're in. I think it's the fifth generation. And they are going to make the thinking computer. And one of the hottest areas now in computer science is the area of artificial intelligence. I've done some reading in that area, and what these people are saying is we must begin to accept the computer in the future as an intelligent being. Okay? And at first that sounds rather strange, particularly if you've programmed the computer and you've had all of these frustrations and realize how dumb it is when, you know, a simple little mistake that anybody should have known, the computer doesn't know that. But here's the way they rationalize that. They say, well, let's suppose that you're placed in a room and you have a form of communication, either through voice or there's a teletype or some sort of kind of communication, and you're communicating with a being that's outside of that room, okay? And you have a discussion, and you ask questions, and you learn from that, and you quiz it, you ask anything you want, okay? And you reach the point where you can't tell whether it's a machine on the other side or whether it's a human being. Then why shouldn't you call the machine, and you find out later it's a machine? Why shouldn't you call a machine intelligent? Okay? So here you are, you're in this room, and you're having this conversation, and you're asking it questions, and you say, boy, that's a really pretty smart person over there. That's pretty intelligent. Oh, that's a pretty caring person, a person, loving person. And you say, oh, boy, you know, that really is. And then someone comes up to you and says, aha, you got fooled. That was a machine out there. You say, oh, it really wasn't caring. It really wasn't intelligent. It really wasn't smart. You say, well, why? Are you being prejudicial? Are you practicing human chauvinism? Okay? That you're being prejudicial to the machine? Are you saying you're basing your prejudice on carbon-based intelligence, that is, carbon, where our brains are made up primarily of carbon, and being bigoted against silicone-based intelligence, silicone being what the computer is mainly made up of. And they raise that kind of question. Well, what do we have to say to that? Now, there have been some computer programs that have done this. Joseph Weizenbaum developed a program, I think it's ELISA. Anybody read on ELISA, the program ELISA? ELISA was based upon the therapy of Carl Rogers, a psychologist. Somebody familiar with Carl Rogers? Okay, Carl Rogers correct me on this, Carl Rogers doesn't believe that the psychologist cures you, but the psychologist kind of facilitates you helping yourself. Isn't that pretty much how it is? Yeah. Okay, and there's a whole school of psychology, and Carl Rogers is a very loving, caring, comes across as a very loving, caring person. Well, this person studied Carl Rogers and developed a computer program called ELISA, and people can get on this computer program. They can't talk to it. They don't have the voice part, but of course, engineers will tell you that's just a matter of technological refinement. They had this. And people could share their problems, and people could discuss their problems with the computer, and they were finding that the people were very open to the computer and very, very warm towards that, and very willing to share things with the computer. And they actually had some psychologists hold up this program as a model of a good psychologist to help you. Okay? Now, what do we say to that? Now, what about teachers? Okay, I'm a teacher. Well, suppose we can develop a computer-aided teaching. And just think of all the things we could do. We could have beautiful video displays, and we could have the computer programmed with the latest information on learning psychology. So as the student went and took tests, the computer would analyze those tests and provide the most advanced kind of psychological reinforcement so that the student would want to learn and be excited. And if you look at these kids on the video games, they get excited by this. And what teacher could compete with the Star Wars capabilities of a large technological system programmed with the greatest experts we can find on learning psychology? Who could compete with that? Is it a computer intelligent? Is it not? Okay, so we're seeing we're being confronted with some of these questions. What is that? And we, as we begin thinking about that, we start thinking, well, what can I do that the computer won't do better? And of course, a lot of people are finding out as they lose their jobs that they can't do it as well as the computer. We see robots, of course, performing now skilled labor. It used to be unskilled that the machines used to replace, but now the welders, skilled labor, replacing them. And we're beginning to see the computer come into the white collar, and replacing them. They're developing computers now for say, doctors, where it's an expert system. And a person simply asks, or the computer asks you to get certain kinds of information, you put it in, and the computer says, well, I think you ought to run this kind of test, or this, or do you find this, this, and this, and they come up with a diagnosis. Okay. They have, in terms of geology, they had an expert system, and they actually used it, the oil companies actually used it, and it helped them actually discover some, I guess it was some oil deposits. What do we have to say to this? Is the computer intelligent? What do you think? Is the computer thinking? What is your response?
Yeah, just my response would be it's only as good as its model or its programmer. You know, if you program it to be very caring, I would think you have to be a very caring person. You know, the intellect is the intellect of those that are preparing these things.
Okay. The one thing is the model is only as good as the model. There's one thing that happens, though, that quite often these computer programs gain a life of their own. They get revised, they get changed by a variety of different people. In fact, they're now talking about some computers that do their own programming, okay, in terms of information that comes in. And so quite often when you have a computer program, you can't really say who the author is. So I kind of agree with you. Of course, the programmer has, you know, some, what the programmer puts into it is of course, is important. That's essential to what the computer does. But if, assuming we have some good programming over time, should we say, let's suppose we have good programmers, okay? Good, intelligent, caring programmers, okay? We don't necessarily have to. Do we have a caring, intelligent computer then? Somebody else.
Yeah. I take things back to a very simple form. As a kid, there were games out you could play, and those games would give you choices, And depending upon the choice, you could, a question might be, who was the third president of the United States? And you would answer that right or wrong, and it would take you the next one. The computer that I'm familiar with, computerization, nothing more than a very advanced form of that kind. And so the computer doesn't talk to you, but rather you're interacting with the program in not much a different sense than as a child's game where you go from A to B to C, or maybe you go from A to M to X.
Okay.
Because of the steps that are programmed in. So
yeah.
I don't know if you're talking to a computer, but rather you're interacting with a program.
Okay, but should we call that interaction intelligent if, here we are in the room again, remember, and we've got, we're down there, and someone tells us that it's a person there, and we come back and we say, boy, that was a really intelligent, caring person. We ask it all kinds of questions. We ask it for advice. We quiz it, maybe, to see what it knows and doesn't know. And we say, yeah, that's a caring person. We spent maybe days there doing that. And then we find out later that it was a computer. Now, should we not use the word intelligent and caring anymore? Say, oh, that's just the machine? Okay, back here and then over there.
It's not like to me that right now it's at a state where 95% of most human efforts seem to be this kind of logical, well, if so-and-so happens, let's make people you make a decision. You got this tree of decisions. So you go along and you interact, and the decision-making mode, that's what the computer's doing. Somebody tells you it's a nice day, the sun's shining, the computer knows it's a nice day, well, what do you think? And I've seen some of these things work in a medical type of way. And that is at a level that most, a lot of human interaction goes on. Now, to go above that, beyond that, to the intuitive sense, which I understand like most chess programs work, it seems like we're at a state now where you could communicate with it, and it's picking up the voice box, this will be out, and are out, that you, in order to sense, you would not know this, a human being or a computer, and this program can work that way. Now, you go to the next level, intuitive sense, that's where you start talking about intelligence, life, and all that kind of stuff. It's adaptable, and that is probably coming too. Very shortly.
Okay, so that's coming too. That what the programmers will say, somebody will come up and they'll say this. They say, well, look, your computer right there isn't adaptable. It doesn't learn the way I do. And then they'll say, oh, what do you mean by learning? And they say, well, being able to correct and get new ideas and so forth. Say, well, we're working on that. In other words, even if you go up to the existing computer programs and say, boy, you can't do that. And they'll say, well, we're working on that. In a few years, we'll get that. So if we're thinking in the future, in principle, what are we talking about? Okay, so you know, we might say, well, now that computer program isn't good enough. And they say, oh, wait 5 years, we're making it. Well, suppose they make that. Suppose they go ahead and have a computer that satisfies our criteria of intuitiveness. Do we call it an intelligent and caring computer? All right. Well, somebody over here had their hand up. Then I'll get over there.
Well, you touched on it. I was just going to say before we... You really get into this, you really need to define intelligence.
Okay. Well, that's one of the things that I think the computer is challenging us to do. And I'm not sure defining is the right word. Computer defines it fairly well.
Criteria, yeah.
What I've done is I've taken the experience where people are in this room, they ask the questions, they go through the information and change, and they say, yes, it's intelligent. Okay? So now maybe later, after the experience, we would want to end up with a definition. And I don't know what the dictionary says, but I would say it has, you know, intelligence by being able to explain things, being able to relate certain things, being able to provide certain answers and so forth. And the computer people say, yeah, computer can do that. Somebody else. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Over here.
I think the whole definition of intelligence has been changed a lot by the advent and development of computers. Just because people are not willing to admit that computers are ever going to be more intelligent than people. And so human possibilities keep getting further and further in life as computer possibilities are developed and realized.
Well, so there's a challenge here that what happens is we define intelligence. And then they develop a computer that can do that. And then we say, oh, we better redefine intelligence because we're afraid that the computer will do it. And then we start looking for those things that the computer can't do. Well, maybe it won't be able to do this. Kind of the old God of the gaps, remember? There was a history where science explained everything is, oh, but it's science doesn't explain this, and God does this, and then science would come up with an explanation for that, and then we have to look for another little gap in here. And so a lot of the discussion now is people say, oh, but intelligence involves this, and computers don't make mistakes, they'd say, for example. That would be one thing. So then they develop a computer program that has this little random number generator in there that throws in different weighting factors, and occasionally it does make a mistake, and then learns on the basis of its mistake. They have programs like that. Somebody over here, and then I'll get back though. I had two people over here. Go ahead.
I know a little about computers, but I have an example in my own lifetime that maybe brings home to me at least the decisions that a computer can make depend highly on mathematical kinds of exactness. And when I was young in the service, I was trained to be a navigator. Went to school something like 4 months for Pan Am. And to learn to navigate by the stars, we did it mathematically. A star fix took about 20 minutes for each star you used in getting a precision point. And to fly across an ocean in an airplane in those days, 150 miles an hour, you couldn't navigate that slowly. So if you did a star fix in an hour, you were 150 miles away for the fix you were supposed to be. And today, if I were a navigator in space, I think I'm right in saying that if you depended, and the astronauts, if they depended on their own mathematical calculations, it would take them a lifetime to figure out
that's right.
how to get to some space out there. They don't have that long to figure it out.
But the computer does.
The computer does it instantaneously.
Just about instantaneously. It does that. It's amazing things that the computer does.
So they don't have to reason to get from here to the moon. If
the computer does it.
The computer does it in Houston somewhere.
So in this sense, we hear we might have some, if we define as part of intelligence, the ability to solve complex problems, we'll have to say that the computer, at least in that respect, is super intelligent. Okay, over here.
I wonder if so far animate and inanimate objects have human qualities only as we human beings assign or ascribe them to them. We talk about the human, or they consider the intelligence we're talking. We're starting to call robots steel quality workers. And it's because we've assigned a human quality to them.
Yeah, we have, but we also assign particular qualities to ourselves. And I think the rub that's coming into here is we're beginning to assign the same qualities to the machines as we are to ourselves, and somehow we're getting a little uncomfortable with this. Yes?
Theological response, I think.
Not too much yet. We wanted to keep it a little more secular.
Okay,
we
can play with it.
Okay, well, we want to play with it a little bit on the secular a little bit.
But this is in response.
Okay.
Second commandment said, thou shalt make no graven image. And I think one of the reasons that God identifies a commandment like that is that there's a recognition that we really can create relationships with things which themselves cannot initiate activity but only respond. And the graven image could become the God when the human being allowed that graven image to seem to be responding to human needs and feelings and intelligence and so forth. Your example of sitting in a room and talking to someone is, in effect, a graven image. As they were saying over here, it's a human being assigning human qualities to something which itself cannot initiate activity. I might not actually initiate love or caring, but can only respond to and then be defined or understood by. These, the Old Testament always considered to be idols because they did get a life of their own. They were given a life of their own, but not by God, but by the people, and yet they could not save, and therefore they were dangerous.
Sure.
And so it would be the same thing here, I think, that these are a graven image of the human mind. And the fear is that we would begin to give them God qualities which they don't have. They cannot initiate love, nor can they save, but we might think that they would, and so truncate our relationship with the saving God.
Okay, now I would say that would make sense, or sort of sense.
In this world,
but not in that world. We go into the secular world, they say, well, the computer can initiate. The computer can call you into that room. The computer can have this voice that says, you know, David, come on in, I want to talk to you. the computer. We can program that into the computer.
Then it's a response to the program. And it cannot initiate activity.
What happens, though, is quite often the computer starts saying things that the programmer never really expected it to say. That happens. There are things that... In fact, there really isn't a programmer in the sense that a lot of people contribute, and now they're developing programs that, in a sense, learn themselves. A lot of the chess playing or tic-tac-toe, the early ones playing tic-tac-toe, they would basically have the computer, and you could beat the computer, and then the computer would learn not to make that same mistake again. And then, of course, as it played several thousand games, it was awfully hard to beat the computer. So some of the computer, the game playing ones, have been learning ones. They're very simple. So they say, well, why can't it learn about a lot of other things? I'm just playing devil's advocate here. I'm not disagreeing in the long run. Yeah?
There seems to be something about vulnerability in an initiation. And I don't see computers in any way, shape, or form vulnerable.
Okay, so maybe something having to do with vulnerability. It's a word that's there. Okay? Somebody else now.
Yeah. They were... You know, I get the sense of we're trying to find something that's unique about our own humanity and our own life that takes us above anything that a computer can ever do. And yet we're trying, at the same time, there's an engineer someplace who's trying to program to match that need in the human being.
And do it even better.
I'm reminded of these...
It's almost a definition of engineering.
Sure, right. Yeah. I'm reminded of the, these studies and training done on some of the higher apes like orangutans and chimpanzees, teaching them sign language in order to communicate. And then, it's seeming to get intelligent responses about non-related things. And yet there are those psychologists that say, no, all that's happening is that the orangutan has picked up some visual cues that you're not even aware you're giving them, and responding to those cues rather than responding to a situation outside the experience of the two of the researcher and we don't want to say this ape has got a human feelings based on what we saw here, or there's a humanness based on what the ape did, but
And yet, when we do find that the machines indeed do things better and better than we do, and things that we, when it was the unskilled workers, we didn't quite mind so much because the computer could hammer better than the machine could. Got a little more uncomfortable with the skilled labor, but now we're finding the doctor, the engineer, and who knows what else. Maybe that they'll be doing more. I'll get over here. I don't mean to skip people, but I'm trying to get people that haven't had a chance yet. Go ahead.
And one thing that occurs to me, you said that the original definition of man that goes back through history, through our ancient times, is the man was a tool maker. Now you find that animals use tools to break shells and all that kind of stuff. And the orangutans. So, there you state if that's true, is man a tool maker and nothing else is. Is a computer a tool maker? If man is adaptable, he learns from the experiences. Computers now learn from their experiences. Enough and up and up and up and up. Now where does it stop?
Where does it stop?
Interesting problem. Where I work, I've got 27 facilities, okay? And so I asked a group of people who were industrial engineers, find me the shortest route between the 27 facilities. I knew the answer. And they played with it for a while and scratched their heads. And the answer is you can't find the shortest route, even with the most computers. That number is 27. Have you ever squared 3, you get 9? Is 27 raised to the 27th power. And in order for all those combinations to be calculated and to find the shortest route, my understanding is it took the best computers in the world and put them on the best environment. We talk somewhere between a million and a billion years for them to crank out that number.
Yeah, there are problems like that. However, the computer programmer would turn around and say, well, we could program a computer to recognize when you have those kinds of problems. Yeah. And the computer would then say to you, look, I'll make a good guess, but I can't possibly go through all of those calculations because it would just take so long, and so I'll make the best guess I can. There's ways you can program that into the computer, right. There's ways, yeah, back here.
To me, intelligence always brings along with it moral responsibility. I don't see a computer having moral responsibility or capable of sin or capable of redemption or capable of eternal life.
But if we use the language from the secular world, we could program in values into the system, and we could even program in a little random, like I say, random parameters so that the computer would occasionally violate those values, and so in that sense it would sin, it would violate whatever the values that was there.
And he is sapped?
Huh?
And he is sapped because of sin as a conscience? Response.
Well, if we'd have to say what we mean by a conscience. If you wanted to have the computer, once it violated those values, the computer to say, I repent, I'm sorry, I will really try not to do that again, we could program the computer to do that. We could do that. If you wanted the computer to cite Bible verses, we can do that too. We can do that. We can have the leading theologians meet and end up setting down the rules. And what degree of sin do you want? We could actually program to any particular level of sin that you want. We could, if you want to have a very sinful computer, we could build in a system where it would randomly throw in certain values and select certain...
Adultery.
Huh?
Have what? How about adultery?
Oh, well, yeah, if you wanted that, I'm sure we could work something out on that.
Well, yeah. Lawyers do that on case law, sorting out the...
Yeah? Go ahead.
It seems to me it just comes right down to the point, without the programmer, you don't have it.
But if we start developing computer programs that are learning...
Who develops it? The programmer.
Well, we start them out, but then after that, the computer programs start developing a life of themselves.
Yeah, you don't start them
out, then. Well, would that be our definition of why we don't like it, is because we started it out? Then, of course, what the computer programmer would say is, well, you're just resisting it because humans started the thing? Are we becoming human chauvinists now? Because, obviously we have a biblical tradition to watch out for things that we start. Right.
It's the same like when you went to college to learn engineering. You can learn so much in 4 years, and then you go and get your master's and your doctorate and so forth. A computer can do it thousands of times faster, so that computer can update all that knowledge in such a minute time that it took you.
Well, if we wanted to slow the computer down to make it my scale, we could design a computer to do that. And as far as the computer getting knowledge from humans to start with, that's how we get knowledge. Mother humans, too. In a sense, we're programmed, by other people. All right, I've been pushing you intentionally. You have an uncomfortable feeling with this. You feel something's missing in the intelligence of the computer, the caring and the loving of the computer. I mean, do you sense that? I hear people saying, but wait a minute, will the computer be able to do this? And then I play devil's advocate and I say, well, we could program one to do that and that. And then you kind of think around, well, let's see if we can come up with something maybe the computer can't do. Okay, is that been your experience? There is some sort of uncomfortableness in that? Let's stick with that uncomfortableness, okay? Let's stick with that. Because maybe what we can do is we can learn something about ourselves. Maybe the danger is not that the computer is becoming more and more like us, but maybe we've lived in a world where we are becoming more and more the model of the computer. And that the reason why the computer is called intelligent is because we now come to think of intelligence in terms of what a computer can do. The danger may be then that we are transforming ourselves into the equivalent of the computer, and something precious is being missed in that, and that we're resisting that. Except we don't perceive it that way. We perceive it instead as we're being threatened by this machine that's getting more and more and more intelligent. Okay, you get that's the possibility. So maybe what we have to do is we have to start thinking back a little bit. Now one of the things that is in a computer is some sort of coded message. I don't want to go through, but there's a code, there's signals that go through a computer. Switches on and off, right? That's basically what's going on in a computer. And a computer program, in essence, tells how the switches ought to go. And there's some sort of coded switches that comes out that's called information. And we have it printed out in words or if it's a verbal response, there are words that are spoken that come out. Okay? So if you're in this room, there are words that come out. Okay? Let's take again this room. You don't know whether there's a computer on the other side, and you're talking to the computer, and you're going ahead and you're getting words back. Everybody see that? Now what I'd like to say is, let's find out where the meaning of words comes from. Okay? But let's depart a little bit from the computer, and let's take another coded message, a dictionary. That's one we're used to. Okay? That's information rich. It's coded. One word is defined in terms of another. It's a very information rich code in there. Now, let's suppose you wanted to get the meaning of a word. You could look it up in the dictionary, correct? Everybody agree with that? Everybody agree with that? And of course, we could program that dictionary in a computer very simply. And of course, we have those. You can have electronic dictionaries that could get meanings of words. And they can operate much faster than you and I could, and they could have a much bigger vocabulary than you and I could. Again, the computer is overwhelming us. But now let's suppose you had that dictionary and you didn't know any of the meanings of the words already. Okay? You've got this dictionary here. It's got all the words. It's a very good dictionary. Everyone agrees. But you don't know the meaning of any of the words. Does the dictionary help you now?
No.
The dictionary is absolutely useless to you, right? It still has the same coded message that's there, the same one, but you don't know the meaning of any of the words, and so it's useless to you. So that tells me that you don't get the meaning of the words from a dictionary, fundamentally. You don't get the meaning of the words from some coded message. Be it in a dictionary, be it in a computer, or be it in some computer that's talking to you. You don't really get the meaning. There's something else that you have to have before that dictionary is of any use to you. Right? Now, how do you get the meaning to any words other than looking them up in the dictionary? How do we get the meaning to a word?
There's a lot of personal contact in how you feel how the other person means that word. Like,
okay.
Back when the doctor got his from the computer all the information, and this is what the person has, well, it could be that the person who puts into the computer all the systems, he says the patient is pale. Well, how pale is pale? And the old-fashioned doctor can feel this person is on the verge of this or that or not.
Okay, so we're beginning to get some idea of where we might get the meanings of the words. The doctor has pale because the doctor's seen a person who's pale. All right, let's think now. How do we get the meaning of words? I think she's starting that. Let's get a few more short ideas. How do we get the meaning to any word? We don't look it up in a dictionary because that just defines it in terms of another word. Okay? We can't just have this cyclical system because all we'll have is these letters going back in the arrangement. We won't have the meaning to any word. How do we get a meaning to a word? Okay?
Basically, we experience and somebody tells us what we've experienced. I mean, you know.
Okay, we experience something. We become involved in something. Okay? And we become involved in it, and in that involvement in it, people might say a sound. I come and I am needy, okay? And I'm in pain. And someone does something to me and I say, thank you. Now that's just the sound out there. And it's expressed in letters. But in the context of the actual experience, the practice, the living practice, that's what gives meaning to the phrase, thank you. You see? And then when you hear the word later, thank you, you kind of relate back to the actual practice that was there. And then after a while, as you experience that word in practice, as a living word, in actual practice, then it gets some meaning to you. Okay? Now let's see, you had your hand up.
I was just going to say purely experience without, no one's telling you.
No one's telling you. You're in it. You're practicing in it. How do we get the meaning of the word care?
Through
C-A-R-E. How do we get the meaning of that word? How does that word get any meaning at all?
By having done it.
By people doing it. By people practicing care. And then someone says, thank you for caring. And now we know what thank you means, and we have to know what caring means. Not because we looked it up in a dictionary, but because it was practiced, because it was done. And then in the act of doing it, the word is spoken and it becomes living word. And then later, someone can come down and write it down in a dictionary. Caring means, you know, doing things like such and so. But before it can get into a dictionary, what do we have to do? We have to speak it as we feel it, and we have to practice it, and then we have to tell about the practice. You see? We have to tell stories. That's how you tell stories about the practice. You get involved in an actual experience, you see? Now, a computer can't do that. I mean, a computer's this thing over there flipping switches. That's what it is, according to coded messages, flipping switches. And it doesn't matter which switches are going one way or another. It really doesn't matter. Okay? But in order for a word to have meaning, you have to practice it. You have to actually do it. And then in order for that word to have meaning in a community of people, they have to share that practice and use that word. They have to tell stories about that. And then when you hear those stories, you know what the meanings of the words are because you have practiced it. And you can relate your living experiences to their stories. You become involved in their stories. And then if we tell these stories and we practice, then those words begin to get meaning. Okay? Then they begin to have meaning. And then, if we're telling stories and practicing and we're doing this stuff, then later somebody might decide to write a dictionary and define one word in terms of another word. But if we don't tell the stories and we don't practice, then there's no basis for any words at all. And then, if we go ahead and we have practice and we have people sharing their stories, and in the sharing of those stories, certain sounds are related back to certain practices and experiences, such as care. And then those words get meaning, and other words get meaning, and we'd be able to learn how to relate those words, and then someone finally writes a dictionary, then someone might come along and say, I think what I'll do is I'll take those words and I'll encode them in a computer. And I will provide instructions to the computer when to write out those words, when to speak out those words, and I'll do it in a way that people do it. Big deal. But the computer doesn't get out and actually care for people. So the computer doesn't really know what care means. All the computer does is flip switches according to some rules. You see? You see the difference? So, you see, and the computer may have brilliant statements that come out, but the meaning of those statements is grounded in practice, actual practice and experience. And then it's nurtured in stories that people become involved in. And then, and only then, if the community does that, then someone might be able to program it into a computer. You see? Okay. So what we end up then is that for a word to have meaning, it has to be a living word. A living word. Now, what can we learn? Does that make sense to people now? Does that make sense? The computer doesn't get out and actually care. If the computer doesn't get out and actually experience pain and then experience gratitude and giving and sharing, it doesn't do that. It just flips switches, right? I mean, those of you that program computers, that's what it does. It flips switches, just like that one up there, except it does it so fast and so precisely according to your instructions. That's what it does. But care is more than flipping switches. We all know that because we participate in it. We know that. We don't have to have a definition. Okay? Yes?
I really don't know that care is any more than just flipping switches.
Well, I think the only way you can get an answer in that is to participate in it. Participate in it. And then you participate in it, and then we speak the words, we tell the stories. Now, the danger is this, though, that in the participating and telling the stories, we reach a stage that once we have a lot of words, then we want to explain it. That's all right, up to a point. But then we confuse the explanation with the reality, you see? Then the doctor comes and wants to explain what goes on in the human brain. So the doctor uses the words, uses the stories, uses those words, and explains how the brain works so that the doctor can help you. And the doctor ends up with an explanation. But that explanation, you see, is grounded in the practices. But we begin to reverse the order. We begin to say, oh, the practices must fit the explanations, and we begin to confuse the reality, which is the experiential reality. We begin to confuse the experiential reality with the explanation that we have for that reality. And the danger is we give a scientific explanation or a technological explanation, which is very good if you have to do brain surgery, and we begin to use that explanation for everything. Okay? That's a danger we fall in. We must remind ourselves that the meaning comes from the actual experience. And only later can people encode it in dictionaries or equations. That's even farther removed. And we must not confuse the reality of those equations with the actual experience upon which they're grounded. Okay? Now, I want to get to where we go in terms of religion on this. What does this tell us about our religion? I think that what's happened is this computer form of intelligence. Okay, the flipping of switches, responding to exact codes. See, what a computer is a set of instructions. Okay? Right? Everybody agree with me? Yes. Program gives a set of instructions, very precise instructions. And the thing about the computer is it follows those instructions exactly. Right? Now you can program random little things into it, but it even that's a response exactly to this set of instructions. Okay? And that's the way we think, or the computer thinks, is just simply following the instructions and flipping switches. But a lot of people approach their religion the same way. What religion is a lot of rules. Okay? And what we have to do is we have to teach people, and Bible study becomes programming, you see. You have to program people so they get all the rules, and if they get all the rules right, then they will behave according to all the rules, and then they will not sin because, of course, they've been programmed not to, and we can build a computer to do that. We can build a religious computer, okay? We can build a computer, and you can have all these religious principles, and that computer will deliver great sermons, and that computer will do all those things, but what is the computer missing? The computer is missing the actual involvement. The words are merely flipping of switches. They are not living words. And I think you've met some people. They spout out rules, right? Okay? And their words are like flipping switches. Okay? What is different, I'm suggesting, is that for it to be living word, it must be grounded not in rules, in actual practice. And as we ground it in actual practice and actually care, the meaning of the word care takes on a meaning for us. And then we share it in stories, and then the word forms a communal meaning. Then later, much later, we may come up with some codes and some rules to help guide us. But we must not confuse that the rules are the things that determine our behavior. Because if we do, if we say the rules are what determine the behavior, then that's the way the computer responds, right? Those are your programmed computers. The computer responds to rules. And if you want a very religious computer, if following all of the rules properly is your definition of good religion and sinless behavior, then we can design a computer that is religious and sinless. Okay? If, however, we take living word, Then you know how we know the word sin? How do we know the word sin? We do it. We participate in it, right? We participate in it. So we are all sinners, right? If we didn't, I guess we wouldn't know what sin was. We participate in it, and we experience the pain, we experience the distance from God, we experience the distance from each other in there, and then we say, that is wrong. And then the meaning of the word wrong takes on a reality, not because of the rules, but because of the actual experience in the reality of our lives. It takes on the meaning of wrong. We say, that is wrong. And someone says, oh yes, but it fits the rules and it fits this. And you say, I'm sorry, it is wrong. You've probably experienced that. And people try to explain it away. And then, of course, we repent. Because when we say it's wrong, we're implying that we shouldn't have done that. And then the meanings of the words begin to go ahead and take form. And then, of course, part of repentance is telling our story, including, and maybe especially, the story of our sins. I mean, if sin is going to be real and that word is going to be real, then the stories about sin have to be told. And then sometimes we encounter goodness. That is right. We encounter it, not because somebody told us that, but something happened. And you know it's right. Then the experience in it, the practice of it. Okay? We've got the message. And we tell the story about that. And we get the right. And we begin to know what the meaning of the word right is. Not exactly. Not like a computer does. There's always a certain amount of, well, I'm not sure to it. That's true. Unlike the computer. All right, now if we look at stories about people making sins and people, you know, sometimes repenting from sins and all of that, if we look at that story, we've got the Bible, see? I mean, we've got the Bible is stories of a tremendous number of sinners and bunglers that somehow discovered in their bungling and their sin meaning, special meaning. Not because they broke the rules. I'm not against rules. But fundamentally because they discovered the reality of God's will in the actual experience of it. They said, I was wrong. And then maybe later, they made some rules. Later. Okay? Because the rules help remind us of what's going on. Okay, do you get the idea? So there's a danger in a technological age that we will make the Bible into the great computer program. And if all we do is memorize all the verses and we go ahead and get base all the rules and then program ourselves, then of course we will be a lot, we won't sin as much, we'll be better Christians and all of that. Well, a computer can do that. Actually, you couldn't program the Bible. There are too many paradoxes that would simply jam your program. It just wouldn't work. I mean, read the story, and that's thankful, I'm glad, you know. I mean, it just wouldn't work. I mean, just think of the creation story. Okay, a lot of people say, well, that's science. That's it, because science is the authority figure in our society. We can program science. Okay, they can program equations into the computer. There's two creation stories there, right? Now, one of them, for example, men and women are created on the same day, right? Isn't there another one where a woman's created after man? I mean, some of you know your Bible. Most of you probably better than I do. Isn't that right? Am I right? Two different creation stories? Now, those of you programmers, how are you going to program the computer to have them, you know, created on the same day and not created on the same day? This doesn't work. It doesn't work, okay? So we have to go ahead and say, well, this is not a coded message that's to be jammed into a computer. These are stories that we must become involved in, and as we become involved in those stories, we will gain a special meaning about God's relationship to us and our relationship to the Word and to the world. And as we tell those stories, we get those meanings. But if we look for a nice scientific code, the kind of code you could put into the computer, we're going to be terribly frustrated because there will be contradictions there. Okay? contradiction, and of course mathematics, if it's a mathematical code we're putting in, they don't tolerate contradictions. The Bible is full of contradictions, and I don't think I'm being sacrilegious when I say that, okay, if you approach it as a mathematician. I think maybe we should be more Jewish and accept paradox. The Bible is full of paradoxes. I hear this Jewish rabbi in the background saying, "So you're upset about the contradictions and paradoxes? Would you like to live in a world where everything was mathematically, everything was mechanically ordered?" And we'd say, "Well, no." I said, "Well, then don't be upset when it's not." That way. Okay, you get the idea. All right, the living word, then, is essential to have the meaning of any word. It must be practiced and shared in story. And the computer cannot do this. Or, let's put it this way, the computer can only do that after we have actually become involved and practiced. And then maybe we can get the computer to do some things. Okay? What I'm getting at now is technology is forcing us to go back through things like the computer and say, who are we called to be? It's forcing us to. It's making us uncomfortable. Because you see, we've already become very technological. We already start to think of intelligence as rules and following rules and doing all the right things. We've already done that. And now the computer can do it better, and that makes us uncomfortable. And so in that sense, maybe the computer is a gift. It's a gift that's prodding us. Maybe it's God's way of prodding us to listen to God's call, which is different than behaving like a computer. Okay, you got the idea? Okay, are there some comments and some questions? Or yes?
Something that goes through my mind is that there's something that we are computeristic, illiterate. And we're going to have to face this someday. And if everybody's ever seen the movie The Colossus, the Forbidden Project, which saw the computer become very intelligent and grew and evolved and is capable of changing itself. And this is coming in the laboratory. It is coming. And I'm afraid we're going to be at the point where we have these things and we're not going to understand it, have any control over it, do anything to affect its direction, because we're going to be illiterate. Okay. This is the comments around interference. It's not a godly person. It's not a whatever. It's not, we're making a graven image. And we could do very well, make that a graven. Here's this computer controlling our entire society, controlling everything. And it is capable of doing that. It will be capable of doing that. And therefore, I'm afraid that we are not facing up to that situation of our relationship.
That's
to
right.
That
it's,
thing.
It's a challenge to it. But we have to remind ourselves that the computer is an encoded flipping of switches.
I disagree that down the road, 5-10 years down the road, well, we will not be able to make that same statement.
Well, if we develop a computer that can actually become involved, if we can actually care, that can actually become involved in our lives, okay, then I think the argument becomes kind of strange, because what we're basically saying, if we can make the equivalent of the human involved in this, and it doesn't fit the definition of what computers are now. The computer can go ahead and respond to coded messages and evolve its own coded messages, right? But the question is the meaning of the output, the meaning of it. Does it mean anything? And I'm saying that meaning of the output must occur through involvement of which we are called to be involved, if it's going to have any meaning. The computer can put a tremendous amount of amazing things. Does it have any meaning? The meaning, I'm suggesting, is grounded in practice and experience. And I give my model of the dictionary. The computer can spit out all these words in the dictionary and can arrange them into brilliant compositions. But if we cut off practice, none of the words in the dictionary have any meaning. You see? So we can have this computer that's a William Shakespeare and composes sonnets and plays and all the rest of that with these words. It arranges those words. But if those words are to have any meaning, they must be grounded in practice, actual living practice and shared.
I'd like to give an example, because if we have a computer controlling our lives, telling people the thing to do and that, and this has got to be done, this has got to be done over here, it's directing us, okay? Are we going to have some words into what is directing us and what to do? And that begs the question, yeah, your word, but it's giving us a very factual thing. You shall do this and that.
That's right. We can't, what the danger is, we can become a carbon extension of the computer. Okay, carbon-based extension of the computer. We can respond to the instructions of the computer, and we will not make ourselves, somebody used the word vulnerable before, vulnerable to something beyond what the instructions say. That's a danger, the danger. And what I'm suggesting is the danger is that we will become thinking and identifying ourselves as being just like the computer. I'm not putting computers down, by the way. I'm not putting them down. And we will forget that it is grounded in practice, the meaning of the words. And so then we have to ask the question, what kinds of practices do we need to nurture the words that are so important to us? And that becomes more of a religious question. And if we rely on the computer to tell us just that, then there are dangers. And they're coming, you're right. Yes?
Isn't the TV the same thing, though?
I think the TV is very much the same thing.
It's a computer, too.
To a large extent, except it is an organizational computer, in a sense that there's human organizational systems, and they are responding. And we already have an awful lot of our jobs. The reason why the computer can replace us in those jobs is because the jobs have already been transformed into a technological activity. You take the checkout person at the grocery store who is trained to say thank you, thank you, thank you, and the reason why they're trained to say thank you is so that you'll come back to the store. Okay? They computerize that, and the computer says thank you, thank you, thank you. Okay? And the reason why they program thank you into it is because they want you to come back to the store. The word thank you now takes on a new meaning because it's used in a different context. It's used in a context to con you to come back to the store. And eventually its older meaning, that is an expression of gratefulness, becomes lost because the meaning of a word always is related back to its practice. And if we allow our technological system to determine those practices and to take those words, we will lose the meaning of those words. Okay, that's what I'm saying. Yes?
Well, something occurred to me when you were speaking about people who take the rules of a religion and make that their religion.
Right.
And it occurred to me that throughout history, like, we have a possibility with the use of computers and technology of not turning into a machine, but being free from being machines.
That's a possibility, right?
Because through a lot of our history, we have actually been machines. Like, you go out and you plow the field all day long. What are you but a walking machine? And you go and scrub laundry all day long. What are you but a washing machine? And the trouble is, like, far be it for me to criticize other people for laziness, but we have a tendency, like, if the computer is doing this for us and that for us and that for us, we're likely to just, you know, sit there like that instead of taking advantage of that time that is provided for us and become more human, which is what a lot of the kind of the idealistic goals of technology are, is to allow people to become more human rather than to just keep on being machines.
That's right. If we could learn to appreciate technology as a gift, and a gift is not something you're dominated by. And there's one other word I want to reintroduce again. We must watch out that technology does not become demonic. And the word demonic, as I said yesterday, means something related to the good. Something that can be a vehicle to goodness. Something that can provide an opportunity for goodness. Technology. But that something becomes overextended until it becomes the definition of goodness itself. And I use goodness in the capital letters. And so then the technology determines the meaning of our words, because that's the way we practice, we operate all this. And then it determines the meaning of our words. And then we shape our behaviors to fit the meanings of those words. And as we do this, we begin to approach, I guess, an idolatrous state where we are responding merely to the creations and manipulations of our own human developments. As amazing as they are, the computer is amazing and powerful. I suspect the ancients thought their idols were amazing and powerful, and maybe that was one of Walt's points before. Somebody else, yeah.
No, fine. You covered the point.
Yes.
I was wondering if our deliberation about the computer might be actually good practice for the next step is coming, because it seems that we're kind of in bioengineering kind of accelerating our learning curve also, and we'll have some of these same kinds of questions related to it.
We're going to have an unbelievable amount of questions. I would say right now, I want to end this discussion, I would say that what is important, what comes across as being important, if our computers or our words are to have any meaning, is let's think of words that are very, very precious to us. Love, care, for example. If those words are to have meaning, we must practice the acts that nurture those words. And I think, as Walt pointed out this morning, those come quite often from the downtrodden, the people who have very little influence. You think of the people who really cared, and you think of the act of care. It's usually not something that's rewarded financially. It's usually not something that is the great trumpets are blaring. They are little acts. And what I'm saying is the meaning of all this technological activity is going to be dependent upon all of those little acts. And if those little acts don't happen, we will have these brilliant computers, amazing ones that can do wonderful things, and the precious meaning of those little tiny words like care and love will be lost, and they will be taken over by the technological system itself. So if we end this discussion with a thought, the thought is, those little acts that nurture the meaning of those precious words are essential. Essential now, and we must remind ourselves that over and over and over again, because we live in a world where they must be protected. Those words, the meaning of them. Think of the word care, how it's been changed. We say the word careless now. Careless, without care. What does it mean? It means not being precise or exact. It doesn't really mean without care, the kind of care a mother would give to a child. It means not precise and not exact. You see, the computer is very precise and exact. And if we're careless, we're not behaving quite the way the computer should. When really the meaning of careless should be, we're not behaving quite the way a loving parent should. Okay? But that meaning is being lost in the word careless. You see? So there's and when the meaning of a word gets lost, that's a signal that the practices that nurture those meanings are being changed and taken over by something else. So, those gentle practices, those vulnerable practices, somebody said that, vulnerable, those are essential in a technological age. And the computer isn't going to replace the need for those. It's going to make the need for those much more. Much, much more. Okay? That's the final thought. Okay, I think we'll end now. And thank you for your discussion.